The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today.
Koutou katoa, no mai, haere mai ki Dietary Requirements, the Spinoff's food podcast, ko Simon de Toko Ingoa, kei te hiakai aho. I'm joined by the Spinoff's food editor, Alice Neville, and the food Beyonce of New Zealand, Sophie Gilmore.
I still can't sit through that without laughing.
Kia ora koutoua.
Kia ora.
Kia ora, Simon.
And today we are really excited to have a very special guest joining us, Rosemary Dempsey. Rosemary is the inventor of kiwi onion dip and an iconic New Zealander. She deserves to be on an official banknote or maybe even the flag. Welcome, Rosemary. We're very honoured to have you in our
presence.
I'm sorry,
I'm still laughing. I really can't quite accept that.
No, she's also very humble. Very brief housekeeping. Because we wouldn't be here without them. The Spinoff's food section is made possible by our wonderful sponsors, Freedom Farms and the Fine Wine Delivery Company. Fine Wine Delivery Company is all about bringing you the best beer, wine, and spirits at the best price. And you have got their Auckland superstores on Lun Ave in Mount Wellington and Constellation Drive on the North Shore. And it's the back end of November, so we're already thinking about Christmas, and they've got really great packages for clients, for staff, and for personal gifts too that make a much better Christmas present than a new pair of socks or undies. And Freedom Farms believes that everyone who eats meat has a responsibility to know how that animal has been farmed. They're dedicated to providing you with the best pork, free-range chicken, and eggs. This week we are eating a cassoulet made with their sausages and chicken. And again, because it's nearly Christmas, you need to be thinking about ordering your Christmas ham. And you can get Freedom Farms' beautiful Christmas hams via the Faro website. Start ordering now because they do sell out and you will then be able to pick them up in store. And later next month, they will appear at Countdown supermarkets across the country. Check out all they have to offer at freedomfarms.co.nz and finewinedeliverycompany.co.nz. Sorry, I think it's finewinedeliveryco.co.nz. Final piece of housekeeping. Says it there, Sophie. Final piece of housekeeping. Everybody Eats needs your help. They're now open 4 days a week, Mondays in the original space in K Road at Gamaze Street, and Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays in Avondale at the Woodworks Cafe. They'd love you to sign up to volunteer. And
you can do so via our new website.
What is the website?
EverybodyEats.nz.
Cool.
So join the – there's 600 volunteers already enlisted with Everybody Eats, but the game is being changed when we open full-time. So that will be from the 14th of January next year, we'll be doing 5 days in Avondale. So get on board.
Exciting.
Do you need any special skills to volunteer?
Absolutely not. Oh, basically, it's about getting people together that are enthusiastic and they might be specifically engaged by the – food waste component of the problem that we're trying to solve, but also the food poverty. It can be anything, whatever makes people feel enthusiastic and mobilized, and we tell you what to do, so don't worry about cooking skills.
Cool.
Well, 2 years ago, our spin-off journalist Hayden Donnell, who loves kiwi onion dip more than anyone else in the world, went searching for its inventor. And when he contacted Nestle, he was told that Rosemary Dempsey had invented kiwi onion dip, and that unfortunately she had died, unmarried, leaving behind no children. Fortunately, this was untrue, and we're very lucky to be joined by the very much living and breathing Rosemary Dempsey today. Hayden managed to track her down, and she's become a bit of a part of the spin-off family.
She's here looking completely glamorous, yes, in a matching two-piece tweed arrangement, cashmere sweatshirt, pearls, the whole lot.
Welcome, Rosemary.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Would you like to correct the record on what this lady was telling people?
I'm very much alive. I have two children, and I plan to be around for quite a lot longer.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Can you tell us the story of what you were doing and how you came up with the kiwi onion dip recipe?
Well, I started the Nestle Test Kitchen, and part of my role was to encourage people to use our products. I mean, that was I was there for. And every month we would have AC Nielsen come to us with showing us what the sales were of various products. And I noticed onion soup was going into a big dip, and reduced cream even further. So we felt we really had to do something about that. So I went back to the kitchen and from there experimented, because dips were just coming in at that time. And I thought, well, that would be a good thing to do if I could combine them. And that's really what happened. I just tried it and thought, that's good. And from then on, the onion sales, soup sales grew, the reduced cream sales grew. And they're still very good sales.
Did you know you're onto something that would become so popular the moment you did it?
No, it was a job. That was just something that I did, and I loved experimenting.
Yeah, I think it was a brave experiment to put condensed milk with reduced cream with onion soup mix. I mean, I would have thought the outcome would not be as positive as it was.
Well, I think probably fresh cream was the basis of several dips at that time.
Okay.
And we didn't have fresh cream on our
catalog,
so therefore reduced cream, and it had the flavour. I tried onion soup with fresh cream, and it just didn't come through enough.
Yes.
But when I put it with the reduced cream, that extra flavour in the cream, however one may like or dislike, with the onion soup blended beautifully.
Yes.
And then you play a bit further, and you think, oh, I might add some lemon juice or vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
Then we added tomato sauce, all sorts of things.
Yes.
But the basic thing is just the onion soup powder and the cream. And if I don't have lemons, I just mix it together.
Yeah.
I don't know if it really, really needs that lemon juice.
I'm pleased you've said that, because I've never actually had it with an acid in it. And often for me, the issue that I take with it is that New Zealanders eat it before a meal, and it's rich and it spoils your appetite. And I think it would be balanced with a bit more acid. So thank you for that.
Well, we've got some freshly made kiwi onion dip that Rosemary's whipped up for us just here. So I think we'll eat and chat at the same time.
Awesome.
This is made so at this point without any without any lemon, but we will add that later.
Are these chips both the same flavour?
No, there's some ready salted and some salt and vinegar.
Salt.
Yes, I do. Rosemary's already familiar with my penchant for salt.
Because we sought some questions from our readers via the internet, and that was actually the first question people asked. Daniel Lister asked, do you use ready salted or salt and vinegar chips?
I prefer the plain chips with it. I don't really want any more salt. But then, you see, I think you should keep your salt levels down anyway. So I would do plain chips.
Let the dip sing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try both and see what I think. Yeah. But the salt and vinegar was great.
Yeah.
And so then continuing on through some of these very important questions, Ian Stewart asks, it's actually on what we've just been talking about. Do you prefer vinegar or lemon juice? He's only ever done it with lemon juice. And is it truly either or do you prefer one, or is it however you're feeling at the time?
I think it's how you're feeling at the time, what you've got in the cupboard. But really, when I make it now, I just use the onion soup and the cream. Occasionally I may think, oh, I've got a lemon there, I'll use lemon, but I don't really think it's necessary. This is 55 years later, I think maybe I didn't need that lemon juice.
Do you make it often?
Probably about once a month. Because at the village, we have quite a lot of activities, and you take a plate or you take this or you take that. And I like to not only serve it in the dip, but you can get those little phyllo pastries.
Mm.
And if you pop it in there,
Put
it in there and add some colour, whatever it might be, a tiny piece of tomato skin or a piece of some parsley, chive.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's lovely.
Mm. So how many times that you serve the dip in a social situation do you raise the fact that you are the dip's inventor?
Never.
Oh. Really? Do other people bring it up?
It's over to them to find out. There's no way I'd tell anyone.
So do people at the village know?
After some years.
They're about to find out, Rosemary.
Yeah.
After some years, they did.
Yeah.
They'll need to make an honours board
was,
for you.
And that was
village.
Hayden's fault.
Yes. Yes.
Fault.
He revealed you.
He doesn't do much right.
Poor Hayden.
Who mustn't say that?
We love Hayden.
On the topic of catering for parties, Alex Everett asks, what's your favourite food to dip in the dip?
There's such a wonderful range of crackers. I like a varied range of crackers. I think we've got some marvellous crackers out there in the market now, and they look great if you get different shapes, different sizes. That's probably my favourite.
Ever use veggies?
Yes, I hate them.
With the dip or?
With the dip. I don't know. It's just something that I don't really, I know they're terribly good for you and all that, but I really don't need raw vegetables while dip.
No.
But at the moment, I'm experimenting. I'm making some bread sticks out of puff pastry.
Wow.
Have you used horopito?
Yes. Yes, delicious.
Yeah. Well, with your pastry, sprinkle it on and roll it.
Yum.
And cut it.
And you really are an innovator.
Well, that's what I enjoy. Yeah.
I love to hear that you're still doing it. I was quite surprised at cooking school. I made, with the puff pastry that we'd made, I made cheese straws, which is kind of what you're talking about, and how easy, yet also not as straightforward as I thought, because you have to, you do the filling and then you fold it over.
And then you roll it out
and then you do it again. So the filling is, in fact, between the layers of pastry.
Yes, it is.
And that's
the trick. Yeah, and if you make the breadsticks, what's that, about 3 inches?
Yes.
Yeah, about 3 inches.
Yeah. A lot of twisting goes on, too.
Yeah, you can twist, but sometimes I don't.
Sometimes.
Depends on my mood. Sometimes I twist them, sometimes. But I think I've just about got them right. They're delicious with it.
Oh, we'll be popping in to see you.
Yeah, definitely.
Anna King Shahab asks, how do you feel about using sour cream in place of reduced cream?
No.
Anna prefers it.
Does she? Mm. I must try it.
Anna's a famous foodie in Auckland.
Yes, I wouldn't even think of it. I haven't thought of it. But I shall certainly try it, and I'll let you know.
Yes.
Ruth Cameron wants to know, this is an important question actually, what is reduced cream? And what is it used for other than onion dip?
I don't think very much, actually. Because when it was first produced, it would have been at a time when fresh cream probably wasn't readily available. And so you had the tin in your cupboard. And you used it as cream.
So you could serve it with a dessert or something like that?
Yes, definitely. It would be used in the very early days, excuse me, when it was produced, it would have been as a cream for sweet things. It's only in later years that it was used in savoury dishes.
So is that as an ingredient rather than as an accompaniment? You'd make it?
Yep.
Okay.
Yes. And it was probably used as an accompaniment. I can't understand why, but it probably was.
Because if you whisked it, you could make it into
it wouldn't become any thicker than it was. But I think probably, if it wasn't for the onion dip, I think Nestle would have deleted it.
You saved its life.
Some years ago, because, fresh cream, you've got fresh cream, you've got mascarpone, you've got all these other products now.
Mm. And now it does say on the tin, you know, they sort of advertise it to make the dip.
Yes. Do they?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, and the same with the soup.
And that, I think that's the only reason it survived.
Yeah, I think so.
And I was thinking that because it can't take the place of mascarpone, it can't take the place of other things.
No,
so it's,
it can't.
It's sort of become irrelevant apart from it.
Exactly. I'm sure that's the case.
Alice, those beers are sitting there glaring at me. Should we have a quick drinks break?
I think we should.
What have we got today?
So we've got a Liberty Brewing Elixir Bright Ale. Basically, I just chose this because I wanted something that would go well with chips and kiwi onion dip. And I put a call out on Twitter to ask people what they thought, which beer they thought would go well. And I got a lot of people saying things like Waikato Draft and Double Brown.
Sophie's husband loves Waikato Draft.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Waikato is his, I don't know if it's his favourite drop, but he'd probably tell you that.
Yeah. But Michael Donaldson, who's a very good beer writer, said he'd been eating the dip recently with an Epic Shotgun XPA, which is a new one from Epic. I couldn't find that. But instead I got the Liberty Brewing Elixir Bright Ale, which they also describe as a extra pale ale.
Oh, I was going to say, what is a bright ale?
Well, yeah, so on the box it said extra pale ale, but on the labels it says bright ale. So we'll see. I think I've had this one before, but I just thought it might be kind of light and bright and work nicely. But
Let's do it,
yeah.
Can I ask a question on behalf of other beer rookies?
Yes.
Is XPA lighter and more citrusy in general than an IPA or an APA?
Well, it's one of those things that's a bit controversial, and there's actually a story about what the heck an XPA is in The Pursuit of Hoppiness, which is the magazine that the Society of Beer Advocates puts out.
Okay.
Basically, probably it's going to be a bit lighter and sort of more refreshing than an IPA or an APA, but it can basically be whatever the brewer wants it to be.
It's very vague, all this beer terminology, because we had the same question with IPA and APA, and you said there actually isn't. You can just call it what you like.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean,
the same thing applies to wine in many ways too.
I guess wine is more, because you have a grape variety, so I guess that is more
characteristic,
often provenance can be more definitive of flavour than the actual grape itself.
Yeah, that's true.
And that tends to be because a style becomes popular.
Alice is having a lot of
provenance.
I've got a very bad
my experience of the XPA was Sawmill did a really delicious one at Christmas time last year, and it was really fresh and delicious. So I've ever since then decided I like XPA.
So Hayden Donnell actually stuck his head in the studio door, so we took a real drinks break, set up a microphone and have invited him in. And we thought, Hayden, you might be able to tell your story about finding rosemary, hunting for rosemary and discovering rosemary.
Finding rosemary is the official title. Hello, nice to be here, everyone.
Hi.
I'll just do this little drink sound, me pouring a beer.
Rosemary, it's only 11:30, but would you like a beer?
No, I'm fine, thank you. I have some here.
Oh, no, I'll get you some more.
She's having a taste.
Thank you. No, it's pleasant, isn't it? Oh, thank you.
It is nice, isn't it?
It is. Mm. Very pleasant.
It's light and fresh, and I think you're right. In lieu of acid in the dip, it's a really nice accompaniment.
Yes, cuts through
the richness. Before Hayden starts, I'm actually going to add lemon juice now to the dip.
Hayden, is that sacrosanct?
Yeah, well, no, it's not. I'm a lemon guy as opposed to a vinegar guy, if I have to choose one of the two, but obviously rosemary didn't originally have either. They're a nice later addition, though.
About a teaspoon.
Okay. And Rosemary said she's not actually in one camp or the other. Yeah. She said, whatever you've got in the pantry.
Yeah. And if you don't have it, don't bother.
Okay.
I agree with that. I don't usually bother.
Mm. Mm.
I think it's perfect, just the two ingredients, and that's the great thing about it.
Perfect. You are. You really are the biggest fan of onion dip.
No, I think I probably am, and that's where the story really begins, because, I mean, I obviously, eating onion dip is the best thing I do all year, and I used to think this. For 28, 29, 30 years, I would just think, what a miracle. And then one year it sort of dawned on me, like, who invented this? You know, who is responsible for this flavor miracle that I experience every year? And I used to just say it to people, you know, I mean, whoever invented this deserves a knighthood, whoever, damehood, whatever, you know, like, that's what I used to say.
How many times a year are you enjoying onion dip?
I mean, primarily it was summer, but now I've been overseas in London. I'm digressing, but I've been in London for a while. So now I've come back and I'm catching up. Yeah, I'm catching up. So I'm eating it year round. But back then it was summer and I'd say to people, and this was a few years would go by, I'd just say to people every so often, this person deserves the highest honor in New Zealand. And then I was at the spin-off for a while and I thought, God, I should actually act on that.
Put your passion and your job together.
And so that began a very long, exhaustive process of trying to find rosemary, which I could try and recall to you. But, I mean, just as the basics, the breakthrough actually came like when I did a Facebook post with Rosemary's picture from her Nestle days. And your niece got in touch with me and said she's not Rosemary Dempsey anymore, she's alive, and she said you were living on the North Shore, so obviously she hasn't kept in touch. But she gave me your real name, which is Rosemary Mount. And from Rosemary Mount, I was able to track down Rosemary. And then I got this miracle of a phone call after, I think I emailed you and got this number.
No, actually, you rang my sister.
Oh, did I?
Yes, you did.
Is that what I did? Whoops. You have to hunt for the story. You got your hands on the story.
And you've established quite a good friendship since then.
We have. Yeah. Yes, we have.
I'm now acting as her media manager. I approve this appearance.
Yes.
I'm getting 10% of the fee.
I made her my manager.
Thank you so much for that.
I just want to note one thing, like just getting that first phone call where she returned my call, I think we're playing phone tag, but, and hearing that voice on the other end of the line, and it's this very, I mean, you've heard the voice that's on the podcast, but this great broadcasting, Radio New Zealand.
It was born ready.
She just sounded, you know, you always imagine these kind of things, like the kind of person that it would be, but then it just sounded perfect. How I envisaged the inventor of Kiwi.
What a moment.
To sound.
Was she all you hoped and dreamed of?
Oh, absolutely. Well, better, really. Like, I mean, I mean, you could have.
Too much.
You could have been much worse, Rosemary. This is the thing. You could have been a mean old man. I mean, you could have been just some nerd from a bunker, but she's got this sort of effervescent sort of broadcasting.
And a genuine passion for food as well.
Well, I have that.
Yes, and all of the glamour. Okay. Love it.
So, Hayden, we were halfway through some questions from our readers and listeners. And I think this one from Stacey Kokaua is potentially a rhetorical question. She asks, and I think she was asking a sister or a cousin, what would our family get-togethers have been without this woman? I don't know if you can answer that or not. Kate Hardcastle, she has two questions.
A desolate affair.
Without.
Kate asks, question one, why are you not a dame or some other high honour? So it's.
Oh, what a lovely idea, but I rather feel there are a lot more worthier people out there.
There's a story behind that. I think people, I don't know whether you're willing to tell it, Rosemary. People did get in touch with you after my story came out.
Mm-hmm.
And the government?
No.
GCSB.
So, I mean, I mean, it caught the eye of some famous broadcasters like Robert Rakete and Jeanette Thomas, and they really took your cause on board and I was living in London by this stage, but did they get in touch with you?
No, they got in touch with the manager at the Village, and who then put them on to my son. And my son said, oh, I don't really think she wants to get involved.
Where's the petition? I'm keen to sign.
And I didn't know anything about this for some time.
Oh.
And so I said to him, when I found out, I said, hey, who said that? And he said, well, I thought you'd had enough.
Oh, no.
He did.
Not everyone's like Hayden, you know. They can be a lot easier to work with.
Interesting, because I all of a sudden got this email when I was – what happened is Robert asked me to write a letter of recommendation. Well, I wrote this lovely letter, and then I sent it off to Robert. He said it's perfect. And then he contacted me saying, oh, no, you'd said no. But now it turns out it wasn't you.
It wasn't.
So was this a recommendation for a damehood?
Well, yeah.
I don't believe it.
For the order of merit.
Kate Hardcastle, the process has been started. We might have to pick it up now. Kate's second question has already been answered about what is your favourite item to dip, but she comes with sub-question 2A. Is it ever acceptable to dip your fingers in the dip if all dipping items are dipped out?
I think it'd be so messy. You'd have to have an awful lot of paper napkins around.
True. But if you had paper napkins...
No.
It's not very couth, is it?
No.
Hayden's been known to dip his fingers.
No.
I am not a finger dipper. I'll find a carrot or a celery.
There's video footage.
Rosemary's not into that.
Maybe I have dipped my fingers from time to time.
And in a glorious segue into the next part of the podcast, Shane Cowlishaw asks, what is your opinion on bay leaf?
I love bay leaves. I use them.
For what do you use them for?
I use them in stews, casseroles, probably mainly that. I'm trying to think what else. And I also use them in my wardrobe.
What? How do you use them in your wardrobe?
I use them to keep ants away.
Tell me more about your wardrobe.
Well, if you put them in a bag with holes in it, hang it in your wardrobe. Somebody told me about it, and I've been doing it for years, and I don't have moths, so I just assume it works.
Your threads are in good nick.
Yeah.
Yep.
I do I have a sprig of bay leaves in my pantry to keep pantry moths away. Mm-hmm. So.
Also I gather good for ants. If you have ants, sprinkle them around.
Miracle leaf.
I have been told that some people can smell and taste bay and some people cannot.
Like asparagus wheeze.
Yes.
My favourite topic.
Thank you, Simon. Yeah.
But I think that's right.
If you break it up, so we've got some bay here. If you break up a leaf and you crack it, I can smell it then. It
smells so nice.
On its own, there's really no aroma, is there?
You've got to break it.
No. You've got to crush it.
And I think that in cooking, traditionally, its appeal is more about the depth of flavour that it provides rather than its own single flavour.
It's a very different to mint or coriander.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know when you put anchovy in something and you can't taste the anchovy, but the lamb dish suddenly has a great depth of flavour. I think it's more...
Do you think it has more flavour when it's dried?
Apparently not. We had a little discussion on the Kai Corner Facebook page, which is sort of the Facebook offshoot of the spin-off food, and people believed you must go with fresh.
Ah, that's interesting. Oh. I didn't know that.
Is this inspired by that great article that was like, is bay leaf bullshit? And this guy interviews just about every famous chef in the world. And they all say, oh, it does this and that. And then he says, but that's clearly wrong because bay leaf does nothing. It's bullshit. And then carries on to the next chef.
Oh.
I did read that.
So that
may have been where the conversation came from.
Who is the chef? That guy, Kenji Alt Lopez?
I think it was a writer asking many chefs.
Yes.
Okay, so there is an American chef called Kenji Lopez, I believe, or Kenji Alt-Lopez. Anyway, he has set about myth-busting cooking techniques. So basically he will tell you from his extensive research that marinating is a farce, that it only ever, no matter how long you marinate a protein in a marinade sauce, it will only ever permeate 0.1% of the skin.
Really?
So really the reason you like it and you think that it's worked is that you're tasting the delicious skin, but it hasn't gone into the thing.
I believe it. I'm on board.
There's another, there's a whole lot of them, but he goes through and just myth busts brining. He talks about, like, you can brine your turkey all day at Thanksgiving, but the only thing you're going to get is a better looking turkey. There's absolutely no moisture absorbed by the activity of brining, and it's got its other benefits, you know, it's a nice activity, but ultimately I bet it was him that said that bay leaf does nothing.
Well, we've got a live myth-busting session about to go down. I have made a cassoulet with and without bay leaf, and only Alice knows which is which. So we're going to pass it around, keep the banter going while other people chew. Do you want to start, Hayden, seeing it's closest
to you? Yeah, I just had a couple of them. I mean, I can refresh my, I can confirm my verdict.
Why did you decide to, why did you choose a cassoulet to cook? Do, does it, do you think it particularly showcases
French
the bay?
French-style stew scream bay leaf to me.
You need a T-shirt that says that. French-style stew screams bay leaf to me. Simon's well, getting camp so for Christmas, guys.
I've always been a bit. Does this kind of feed into the debate in general, though, about, like, I mean, you people go to these restaurants and they get blindfolded or there's no light or whatever, and then they end up eating a bunch of foods and they just can't tell what food is which, you know. They think a bloody steak is a jelly, you know, like, it's like...
Sensory deprivation.
And it kind of makes me think, like, is all food just bullshit? You know, like, how much is, what like, percentage of our taste is in our eyes, you know, in our perception?
Yeah. I think that alters.
It's interesting.
Simon, I've always said you eat with your eyes. That's why it's so important. When you serve up food, it looks attractive.
Well, this cassoulet doesn't look that great, but it tastes delicious.
Lovely
and what's
flavor.
Interesting is, Hayden, they both look exactly the same.
Mm.
But I think one tastes distinctly different to the other. I'm not quite sure which has bay leaf, but I think they do taste definitely different. So the bay leaf is having an effect on me.
Is that the only difference between the two dishes?
Absolutely the only difference.
Okay, because...
So you don't know. Even though you cook them, you don't know which one.
No, I handed them off to
the
Alice,
only,
the vegetarian.
I hold the truth.
The arbiter.
Yes. So once you've all made your decision, let me know which... One is on a bowl, one is on a plate. Let me know which one you think has a bay leaf.
Sophie just,
I'm eating, I'm trying
just,
to
just
eat.
For those who can't see, Sophie just shoveled like a handful of cassoulet into her mouth.
It was a sausage, and it's quite rogue because it's on a plate and I dropped it. I've had a moment.
Oh, dear.
Rosemary, is that, what's your take on whether you're allowed to shovel cassoulet into your mouth with your hands?
If you want to, you can. Okay.
Thank you, Rosemary, and you should have my back on that one.
So that's what I love about travelling to India is you add another sense to your eating is the feel of the food. You get to find the texture with your hand as you prepare it into that perfect mix of rice and dal, for example. Hayden, you were first. Which has bay, which doesn't have bay?
I'm going to say the flat plate has bay and the bowl doesn't.
I'm going to go the same. I think
the same.
Flat plate has bay and the bowl doesn't. Yep. There was a depth to it.
I'm really surprised because I was quite keen to fail this, but and we might have failed, but I also think that the flat plate has got bay.
Okay, are you ready for the truth?
Yes, we are.
Drum roll. You're all correct.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Wow. Okay.
It's amazing.
I
can't believe it.
That is quite a moment.
Bay is real.
Bay, well,
it's a total
definitively proof that bay is not a scam.
Ooh. I put the second one in my mouth and it tasted instantly different.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it was more of a depth of flavour, but it definitely did taste slightly greener or aromatic. Like it did have a flavour as well as providing depth of flavour. But I'm really surprised. I was thinking, am I just on the bay bandwagon because everyone else is? But no, it's justified.
Fascinating.
Wow.
What a day.
What a day. We've really accomplished something here today.
So the next segment that we do is called Cook's Corner, and we use our vast culinary insight to share something important with our listeners. Again, feel very privileged to have you here, Rosemary, to share your knowledge with us. What would be your big tip or a secret that you haven't revealed before for an at-home cook looking to improve their skills?
what I'm passionate about are those people who go into supermarkets or wherever fruit is and pummel the avocados. It really upsets me.
Squeeze them.
Because, yeah, they squeeze them, and all they need to do is just press the top where the stem comes. Just press it. If it's soft, it's ripe. If it's not, it's not.
They should stop and molesting every single avocado in the shop.
Yeah, really. I know they do. And so I try, and I always buy green ones because then I know I'm not going to end up with black ones. Mm. But if I need a ripe one, I get quite thinking about it.
That's a great tip.
Yeah.
Do you know you can also, if you push it in and you think it feels right, you can peel it away and,
peel.
And see if it's nice and green.
Yeah, and if you want to, when you peel them, slice them just the skin round and you totally peel them.
You could almost eat an avocado like a pear.
You could, and I would because I love them.
Yeah,
but
delicious.
The other thing too, people often let them get too ripe and they almost have a kerosene-y taste when they're overripe.
I think the ultimate illegal move is when people put them on a pizza and heat it up.
Oh, no.
Hot avocado.
Oh, no.
Repulsive.
It's wrong.
I've never heard avocado. Of it.
Well, it's done a lot.
It's immoral. Oh.
Yeah.
No,
it is immoral.
No.
It should be banned by the church.
Well, anybody can ban it. Don't mind.
It specifically needs to be the church.
Yeah. Rosemary gave me another tip about Christmas cakes, which I think is great for the at-home cook. Maybe you could share that with us.
What was that?
Well, you're making Christmas cakes.
Oh, yes. No, I make the four-ingredient Christmas cake. Absolutely brilliant. For people who think that a Christmas cake has about 20 ingredients and you make it in October, those days have gone. Because all you need now is a kilo of mixed fruit and you pour over two cups of orange juice, pop it in the fridge overnight, next morning, add 2 cups of self-raising flour, 2 teaspoons of mixed spice, mix it up, pop it in your tin, pop it in the oven. When it comes out, pour the brandy over, and you've got a beautiful Christmas cake.
Wow, so
really fruity. No eggs, no nothing.
I'm going
to try
that.
My culinary tip is heat up the brandy before you light it on fire.
Oh, yes.
I had a Christmas cake at my wedding, and the people didn't heat up the brandy, and I was humiliated when it failed to light. So it was the cutting of the cake.
It set the tone for your marriage.
Yeah.
There were no flames.
Carried on in that vein.
And another tip too, if you're making Christmas tarts, buy your Christmas mints. That saves an awful lot of problems.
Yeah.
And then add your brandy to it. Add some lemon rind. Add, what else do I put in it? Anyway, something like that. Mix it all up. Store it. And you've got a beautiful Christmas mince.
Oh, so you jazz up a store-bought one.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yes.
Because I like how you're very 2018. Those days are gone, everyone. Get up with it.
No. You don't want to spend that time when you don't
faffing around when you don't need to.
Exactly.
Sophie, as the trained chef in the house, any tips this week?
Absolutely not a trained chef, but you did ask me to come up with a cooking tip. So I thought as we come into green vegetable season, it would be quite wonderful for everyone this year to remember the 2 rules that are really important when you're cooking green vegetables, if you're blanching them in water, that is. Never put the lid on and always salt the water. And if you don't believe me, do 2 different pots and cook your beans in a pot that's salted water and cook it in one that's not, and one of them drains the flavour and one of them traps the flavour. Blew my mind.
Very good. My tip this month is actually going to be pointing our listeners to the spinoff.co.nz website. On the food section, our friend Leisha Jones, who's a very clever food writer / caterer, has written a series called Backyard Bash 101, which is filled with really great tips for hosting a backyard bash, barbecue, party.
They're total hacks, really, aren't they?
They are. So the latest one, which went up last week, is about sort of cheats. So there's a lot of sort of using store-bought items and zhuzhing them up a bit. So there'll be another one out this week, so check that out.
I found it equal parts amusing and effective, that article, because I was like, that is a really funny thing to do. But why not jazz up store-bought dips with a whole lot of delicious herbs, nuts, flavoured texture.
And very important, a bowl.
Yeah, that's more like a riff on Rosemary's Christmas mint. So get what someone else has done and then just jazz it up a notch.
That's a great tip.
So my tip this month is for poaching your eggs. A lot of people add vinegar to the water, which works, helps them bind and stay together, but I think it adds a rather overpowering vinegar flavour. And as an alternative, which I think actually adds a nice flavour to your eggs, is use lemon juice. Same effect.
Yeah.
And also something that's been, this is a tip to all the cafe owners out there, please use a different cutting board for your garlic and onions to your fruit and vegetables. I far too often have onion in my porridge or my my muesli, and that's just not fun.
No. I think the lemon juice thing's interesting. Is this a new move?
No, it was actually shown to me by former boss of mine, Andrew Beach, at Fairfax. So I've held on to that advice, and it's really changed my poached eggs. I agree with him.
And so would you say in the ultimate best-case scenario, your eggs are so fresh that you need nothing? Or you think that lemon is a positive regardless?
I add lemon now no matter what because it adds flavour, and even if they are very fresh, it still makes sure they bind.
I'm going to do that this weekend, Simon. Thank
you. Do you do the whirlpool?
I don't do the whirlpool, but I wish I did. It looks really exciting.
It does look cool, but kind of stressful.
Such a faff. It's fine if you're doing a couple of eggs, but normally I feel like I'm poaching 6 or 7, so I'm happy with just a simmer.
See, I've watched Ben Bostock poach 40 eggs perfectly, not one of them wrong.
Wow.
In a whirlpool.
In a whirlpool.
Mm. Wow.
Mm. Yeah. So that was honestly an incredible feat of human achievement.
Hey, I actually have a cooking challenge, which is because we're coming into the season of pavlova and meringues. Mm. One thing that was really hammered into us at Ballymaloe is never wasting food. And one of the things that they were most passionate about is the fun fact that egg whites freeze perfectly.
Yes.
So between now and Christmas time, no one is allowed to throw out an egg white. If you're not going to use them in the next 3 weeks, you need to put them in the freezer, but they freeze absolutely perfectly. So you can get them out of the freezer and make a mega pav for your family at Christmas.
And write on the container how many whites you have put into the Tupperware container, because I have done that before and then had no idea how many egg whites were I had frozen.
Yes, and I think it's something like, I know that one egg white is 1 fluid ounce because that's the system that they speak about in Ireland, but I think it's something like 60 mil.
Right, yeah.
Don't quote me on that.
We'll check.
I have a food tip. You can eat kiwi onion dip anytime. You don't have to wait for summer. The ingredients are in countdown. Anytime. I do it year round.
As advertised on the tin.
I also have something about potatoes, but that's my main one.
We'll save potatoes for next month, Hayden. We'd love to have you back.
Hey, on the kiwi onion dip, I would like to say that I don't think it tastes any different with the lemon juice, and I thought that it would.
Mm, I agree.
I think it tastes a bit different, but I agree it doesn't really need it.
No. So, I always thought that difference is a bit overhyped.
Yeah.
Maybe vinegar, though, is quite strong. It's like it's like your poached eggs. Probably put that in for a reason. Mm.
If it were a wine, I'd say it's got a crisper finish now, but the actual eating experience isn't very different.
I love that idea of treating kiwi onion dip in the same sort of
fine wine
class as fine wine.
Oh, yeah. It's very similar. And I think the primary difference in your experience will be how cold it is. I think if it's cold, if it's at least quite chilled, it's better.
It's akin to French champagne when it's chilled.
Mm,
mm. Yes.
Think of it as French champagne.
But kiwi.
Yeah.
Kiwi is.
It would go nicely with champagne, actually. That's another thing we could have served.
Oh. Were you inspired at all by French dip, or did any other dips from around the world influence the making of kiwi onion dip?
No, not at that time. No, they weren't. Someone mentioned that possibly I got it from America. I don't know why it should have come from America, because when I go to America, I go regularly to see my daughter. I have to take kiwi onion dip ingredients with me. Mm. So I'm sure that,
Yeah, so California dip is the one that they compare it to, they say. But California dip's quite a lot. I mean, the beauty of kiwi onion dip is it's 2 ingredients. And it's so simple, you could like a baby could do it. A pigeon could do it, probably. Just put its beak in there, whirl it around, it'll be fine.
I mean, a pigeon to do it.
Not sure.
California dip is a lot more complicated if you look it up, but
So another thing that we do on our podcast, Rosemary was asking what a podcast is before I described it as a radio show on the internet. And you can edit out all the mistakes you make along the way too.
That's good.
Although we never do that because we don't make mistakes.
No, we're perfect.
But one of our segments is called The Last Supper, and we like to celebrate a wonderful meal that we've had recently. And we talked earlier, where have you been eating out in the recent past?
I went to Le Grand in Market Road, Great South Road, and had a lovely Thai curry. And the other one I really enjoyed was at a French restaurant at the top of Queen Street, and I can't remember the name. What was it? You Sophie,
I think it's
Sophie.
Le Garde Manger.
Yes, it was. It was. And I had a beautiful steak and mushrooms, and then their creme brulee was superb.
I wonder if they use bay leaf in their cassoulet.
I wonder if they do. In fact, I'm sure they will.
It would be silly not to. We can now say that confidently.
Yes, I'm sure they would. So really quite two different meals, but love both of them.
Both with French names, incidentally.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Simon, where have you been eating?
I was blown away by the tapas at Aporo.
Oh, yeah.
So good.
I think
that goat's cheese croquette.
Oh, yes.
I actually think about it.
Dream
regularly.
About it.
Yeah.
What really got me though was I think ordering falafel is a little bit of a Russian roulette. Although there are more bullets than there are good experiences.
Mm.
Too much falafel is dry or flavorless, and this was delicious. Maybe on par. Potentially not quite as good as the falafel at Gamezi Street, but that is, you know, a Lebanese grandmother's recipe. But this falafel was bright green with coriander. It is just moist, and the outside is, you know, dark brown, really crispy.
I agree with you that it's actually in a different style to most falafel that you order. So I had, the week that I went to Aporo, I had a conversation with Kirsty, who owns Fatima's, about the falafel there. And they have a green, really herby falafel that's quite in the same vein. And they quenelle it into the fryer to order. And that was essentially the same experience of the one at Aporo. So I say everyone needs to put more herbs, more green.
Yes, I like a green falafel.
Mm. And you are a vegetarian. I think you get given a lot of falafel, don't you?
Yes, I do. And, yeah, I agree with Simon. There's a lot of Not great falafel.
A lot of bullets in that chamber.
Yep.
Where have you eaten recently, Alice?
I went to a pop-up the other day. It's called Restaurant Chimera, and it was at Love Bucket Bar on K Road. It's Connor Mertens and Carly Black. Connor used to be the head chef at Orphan's Kitchen, and Carly is his partner. And it was just really beautiful sort of vegetable-based sharing plates.
Are you checking Instagram or looking for your notes?
I'm checking Instagram to be like, what did I have? Because I didn't take a picture of the menu. So there was a beautiful heirloom tomato dish with a garlic and rosemary oil. And rosemary and tomato, you think maybe wouldn't go that well, but it was so good.
Mm.
And a really nice asparagus dish, amazing sourdough with really good cultured butter.
Mm-hmm.
And we had some te matuku oysters, and it was,
delicious.
Just really on point. Oh, and a beautiful eggplant dish with orange and radicchio.
Yeah.
It's really nice season.
I found radicchio really hard to find in New Zealand as well.
I think that enormous props goes to them for pulling off such a great variety of food, because my understanding is that there isn't a full-service kitchen at Love Bucket.
Yeah. There's not, and there's another pop up there this week, which is Cazador doing hot dogs.
Oh, cool!
That we should go along.
We've already had Darius's sausage on the podcast. It was duck sausage served with beetroot, duck that he'd shot, and it was amazing.
Are they just there for this week?
I think maybe urgently get there. I think I feel like it's the 23rd and 24th. Maybe let me check.
So only 2 days.
Okay, yeah. I'll be looking that up.
Hayden, I know you weren't prepared for this segment, but have you got anything to add to Last Supper?
I do. I'm still looking up my greatest recommendation, which is I found the greatest Korean barbecue that I've found in Auckland outside of Korea, and it was on Rosedale Road, I think, on the north shore of Auckland. It's so good. It's in the Albany area, and I'm trying to find the name of it.
I think I've heard of that. I feel as though there's more restaurants popping up in that zone because I never go there. But
the North Shore Korean,
there's a lot of Korean communities.
Large recommendations coming out of the North Shore at the moment.
For Rosedale.
Well, there's big Korean community around there. I'll try and find the name for you. I mean, I'll go through a few. This is my one appearance on the podcast, probably. So I'm just going to
have you back.
We can put it in the show notes.
Chicken with fresh chili at Spicy House, I think, is my favourite dish in Auckland. Just about. I know that's but Spicy House and Dominion Row, get the chicken with fresh chili. I loved Peach's hot chicken. God, it's a lot of chicken.
I had that last week. There's been so much talk about it.
They're a food truck, but they're sometimes at the beer spot on
North
Shore.
That's where I went. Oh, very delicious.
Great burger that they were serving there, and I loved it. Great hot chicken burger, and just Indian food, cassia, was just amazing. A delicious, delicious restaurant.
We do try to think of ourselves as a nationwide podcast, so it's been really good to get some North Shore content.
I was going to suggest, Simon, you maybe get yourself a passport and head over to Rosedale.
Don't want to go too far.
Yeah, Rosedale, I don't know, especially without a name. I don't want to just go driving around Rosedale.
No, you'll find it. Don't worry. Google. Get off at that off-ramp that I can't remember, Greville Road or something.
Oh, yeah.
Turn left and then turn right. It's in a complex there. Don't worry, it's fine.
Simon, I did a road trip around South Island and Wellington last week in my capacity as the DynAid person for the year.
Exciting. So
I wonder whether you'd like to know about any of the awesome things I ate outside of Auckland.
I would.
So really quickly,
I'm into it too.
We flew from Auckland into Wellington and went straight to the City Mission and delivered checks, which was it's always a good time, a feel-good activity. But the restaurant that we went to down there, which for some reason I thought had flown under the radar, but my mother, who was with me, was familiar with, was Field and Green.
Yes, yes.
The most delicious food I've had in a long time.
Yeah, I still haven't been there, but I've heard a lot about it.
The kedgeree was exceptional. We had these gnocchi-type dumplings, which literally could have come straight from the table at the River Cafe. And we had three dishes between two of us because we couldn't decide.
Fair enough.
I had a Bombay omelette with poppadoms and raita and mango chutney, and it was just really, really exceptional.
Delicious.
And then we continued on the next day to Christchurch and popped into Sister Kong, which has a really epic menu. And then on to Oamaru, to the Riverstone Kitchen, which incidentally raised the second most amount of money for DynAid last Christmas. But I remember the noise about them when they won Best Restaurant in New Zealand a few years ago. So Bevan Smith is the chef there, and it's literally on State Highway 1, just outside of Oamaru. But the food was really, really considered, and it was a case of where someone spent a lot of time and energy making something appear simple. So soft polenta with a tomato-y pork and salsa verde for lunch was absolutely ideal.
I think Oamaru is really, really underrated.
Yes.
Really cool little city.
Yeah.
It's the steampunk thing, you know. People don't want the steampunk.
Oh, true.
It does. You know, you don't want to have to deal with that going into a town. a 1700s train conductor with weird glasses on coming up to you and going, ah! You know, better to just drive through, go to the Modaki Boulders or something, you know.
Or Fleur's Place.
Fleur's Place, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Fleur's Place.
Still never been to Fleur's Place.
Neither. I've never been to Oamaru either.
Please go. There's another place that I just started following on Instagram that is in Oamaru, and they are chef pair, maybe, husband and wife.
I think I follow them too.
It's Cucina. Italian. Yes, Cucina. Yeah. And doing really fantastic things. So
it's
can't wait
coming.
To get back down there.
So I thought we'd go to Rosemary to close out the podcast with some very important yes or no questions to help the spin-off with some internal dilemmas that we've been having around the office. So is it too early for Christmas carols on November 21st?
Yes.
Too early. Oh. Even for Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You?
Yes.
John Legend's actually already dropped his Christmas album, Rosemary. What about Friday evening? I'm having a Christmas party. Don't let me down, Rosemary.
I'm with Rosemary on this one.
Yes.
Don't spoil it for the rest of us.
She's absolutely not budging.
No, I'm not.
No.
And finally, Christmas mince pies, good or bad?
Good. Love
yes.
them.
Yes.
Love them.
I love them.
I've been making them.
Ooh, see, yes. Whenever someone wants to give me a Christmas mince pie, all I want is a mince and cheese pie.
Mm. I must send you some Christmas mince pies.
Oh, yes.
My address is... I won't give that out on the air.
It's nowhere near Rosedale.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Rosemary. You're a lot of fun, and it's been a real pleasure to have you on the podcast.
I've enjoyed it so much. Thank you.
We might have to restart that petition to make you Prime Minister.
No, I'm not into politics. Thank you.
but we could get Jacinda's endorsement on the Order of Merit. That's something that could be achieved.
I have another idea for you, Rosemary. I'll talk to you afterwards.
All right.
I want to get you an honour.
But thank you for listening. Please subscribe. Please share it around. And if you have any questions for us, send them to aliceneville@thespinoff.co.nz. Ka kite.
Ka kite.
Thanks.
Hello, for lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi. Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
The Spinoff Podcast Network.